So the Mets now have their fate back in their own hands.
Right.
All they have to do is rally from four runs down in the ninth inning and win this game, and they'll be in the postseason. And he pulls one on the ground, a chance for two, to second one, back to first. And the Mets agonizing 3.5 month slow motion collapse is complete. It is unfathomable that this collection of talent winds up outside of an expanded playoff system after having the best record in baseball for the first 2.5 months of the season. Everything goes wrong over the last 3.5 months, and the Mets find themselves on the outside looking in.
I think a lot of the players felt as though this day would never come, that they'd be able to turn it on at some point and not have to endure this.
2007, 2008, 2025, the Mets get brilliant pitching in game number 161 to put themselves in position, but are unable to seal the deal in the final day of the season and fall to the Marlins, who knocked them out of the postseason yet again.
Okay. Welcome back to the first ever live edition of the Just Mets podcast. We are coming to you moments after the Mets 2025 season has ended in a colossal failure. The Mets lose game 162. They wound up having destiny in their own hands because the Reds lost, and they got shut out by the Marlins. They lose 4-0. They got the help they needed, and they are out of the playoffs. We're going to dive into all of it. Andrew Claudio joining me this week, and I'm not going to ask you how you're doing. Let's get into it. It's been about 10 minutes. What are you feeling right now?
So it's interesting. When I started doing the Mets therapy clips, right? Like started going just a quick 2-3 minutes, my thoughts after every Mets game. Obviously, you have to come up with a theme and a bit. And the whole point of Mets therapy was like, let's put things into context. It's never as bad as it actually is. It's never as good as it actually is. And it's how I usually approach 162 game seasons. I don't try to, at least I try to not overreact to like a bad loss in April or a bad loss in May or June. I recognize what the marathon is. And there's just no spinning that when you fall one game short of the playoffs and you collapse the way that this team did, that any one game that someone wants to go to from this month, from this week, from this second half, or anytime this season, it costs them. Any scapegoat you want to go to, whether it's Carlos Mendoza, whether it's David Stearns, whether it's any of the players, or more specifically the pitchers that played for them this season, yep, their one loss that you could put on them cost them. And look, it's going to be a long offseason, and I'm sure at a certain point we can start to talk about the offseason, but in the moment I'm thinking, and it's how I thought most of today, watching as they slowly had their season slip away from them, that they got here because they put themselves here, and this is the appropriate way for their season and this season to end. So that's really where I land right now. It's not as heartbroken as 2007 or 2008 were at all, but it's absolutely appropriate, and I'm gonna have a hard time trying to find the positives from this season when we're 3.5 months into the culmination ending where it was supposed to.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. One, like, look, we can dig out positives later. That is not the conversation today, nor should it be for several weeks. The Mets will now have to face a reckoning, and it's a reckoning of their own making. You know, there's been a lot of people throughout the season, and I understand being hopeful and being optimistic, and I fault nobody for that. But there was this thought that, like, oh, after all the heartbreak, after all the, like, 50-50 balls that didn't go their way, or them making foolish decisions in the field, or striking out in a big spot, or giving up a big crooked inning. Of course, that happened today, too. That it was somehow going to end in a magical moment when the season itself had been so not magical. I think that was us fooling ourselves, because otherwise it would have just been so bleak to watch this team every day if you thought there really was 0% chance that things were going to turn around. And like you said, it could not be more appropriate that for one final time we were like, ninth inning comeback, and the guy who hit the ball that got them into the postseason last year hits the ball that sends them home this year. And it just is the nail on the head that these could not have been more different seasons back to back. They are completely different teams. And if I'm being completely honest, and this is raw emotion, one of the most unlikable Mets teams of my entire life that wasn't like 40 games under 500. Like, I don't think there's been a good Met team, good because they barely even finished above 500, that I've hated watching more than this team. And while I am upset that they will not make the playoffs, I am upset that the expectations were so off, and that we as fans have to face the indignity over the next calendar year that this disaster has led to. There is a part of me that is so happy I will never have to watch this version of this team ever again, because, man, I'm just done. Like, I'm group, and I just can't watch it anymore, and we don't have to.
I think what goes to that is that this new format, this new 16 playoff, the three wild cards,
yep,
is the only thing that kept us watching to the end. Like, yeah, they would have blown a playoff spot at some point in September if this was a two-team wild card or even a one-team wild card.
And out a week ago.
Well, so even, I would say even like the Phillies series, they probably fall out of it. And we're looking at, like, they're chasing San Diego, or they're chasing, like, that series against San Diego would have been interesting because it would have cut their deficit behind San Diego to one or two games. But because of the six-team format, it's like we were held hostage by this team and by this season. And the only reason to keep watching is because the last three seasons, the six seed made it to at least the NLCS, and the two seasons prior, the six seed made it to the World Series. So there is value in just making it. Hell, I give the Reds a shot with their pitching and that Dodgers bullpen that exists. So it comes down to the fact that I didn't enjoy watching most of the season either. There are guys that are left over from likable teams from years past. Like you mentioned Lindor making the final out of the season. I have a unconditional love for Francisco Lindor. I don't blame him for, honestly, I don't know how big the slice of the blame by could be for him on this season. I know he had a rough middle of the season, but when you finish with an OPS over 800 and you finish with 30-30 and you finish like the guy was the only one with a solid pulse throughout this entire final week, you know, was on base three times today. I have guys like him and Pete and Diaz and even like Nimmo and Soto that I'm going to be like, hey, I enjoyed watching you. When you failed, I felt for you. There's a majority of the rest of this team that I'm excited to never watch play for this team again. A lot of them throw and pitch for the Mets. But if it wasn't for the fact that this new format forced us to watch until the end of the season, we would have been able to move on much sooner. And look, the fact that they don't get in, it almost is an easier death, if that makes sense. Like, maybe they were just going to lose with their pitching against the Dodgers. But now I don't even have to think about, like, how could they make a series with Nolan McClain pitching game one against Otani potentially work? I can move on and focus on the flaws, the obvious flaws that this team has had for 4.5 months. And, yeah, just kind of evaluate what this season ended up being, which was an utter disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can blame anyone individual. Even the Mets' best players, like, they all wear it. You know, you go back to 2007, 2008, and over the weekend, I actually watched some of the post-game clips from those years because I wanted to see how the broadcast booth and some of the reporters had reacted to it at the time. And Keith Hernandez says right after 2007, probably 10, 15 minutes after the game ends, like, this is a stain and a mark on the team and everybody associated with it that will live with them for years, to the point where it's been 18 years since the collapse of 2007. And it comes up every single year when the Mets lose a game in September. And while this has less of the shock factor of how quick it happened, this is going to have a very similar ripple effect that this will live with people for years. And whether that costs the manager his job or players on the coaching or members of the coaching staff or players on the roster, that is yet to be determined. I have to have a feeling they can't just bring back a lot of the same guys, which was the mistake that they did make between 2007 and 2008. I do want to react to one piece of information, though, that came out that I am not particularly happy with, because I'm not saying whether or not Carlos Mendoza should lose his job. I thought he did a horrible job over the last couple of months. I thought he managed a terrible baseball game today. At the same time, he can't make the team hit. So they were never going to win if they were going to score no runs.
Or pitch. They can't make the team pitch either.
Or pitch. But, you know, maybe don't use Ryan Stanek in an elimination game as like your third or fourth pitcher. But within seconds of the final out, we have to have it leaked to Andy Martino that the manager's not getting fired.
Oh, wow. Like,
that's what this team is focused on moments after one of the biggest – if you don't want to call it the biggest collapse in team history, that's fine. It's the biggest failure in the history of the Mets. And that's what we're doing seconds after the last out is recorded. We got to leak shit to Andy Martino. Be like, the coach is fine. That pisses me off. Whether or not they were going to keep him, that is what upsets me. And that really genuinely bothers me.
So I will just know, you talk about the parallels to 07 and 08. Willie Randolph didn't lose his job in 07 either. So if we're actually doing the full parallel, history does repeat itself. Look, I'm so on the fence, Rich, about how much a manager matters. You talk about a stain, like all of the credibility and pomp and circumstance that Mendoza earned last year is officially gone.
Yep.
I think that applies to David Stearns as well. So a lot of people have some important off seasons and now important 2026s that they have to perform better in. The wording of this tweet is very fascinating. And this is where Martino injects his opinion a little too much, I think. And they shouldn't, he adds, as they have no plans to fire Carlos Mendoza off this collapse. I'm glad you get to keep your sources, buddy. But for the rest of us that have to read this, I just need you to report the news. That's really it. Like, say that per sources, the Mets have no plans to fire Carlos Mendoza off this collapse.
I don't need the needling at the end.
I can understand... I can understand them not blaming him, even though I agree with you. Boy, did he overmanage this game. Boy, does he have a lot of questionable decisions and tendencies that I think a young manager probably has to learn from, which maybe this was his growing pains year, which you hate that it came in one of the more important seasons in team history.
Right. But
fine. Maybe knowing this, he'll be better in the future. I also just, and this can kind of inform is where we go with what went wrong this season. As much as there's blood on Mendoza's hands and blood on Stearns' hands, there's also just like a lot of things that nobody could have foreseen going wrong. Like there's the easy first guesses, like Frankie Montas and Cedric Mullins and so many different guys in the bullpen. I don't know anybody who was like, don't bring Kodai Senga back, especially when he had a ERA under 1.5 for the majority of the first 2.5 months of the season. I don't know anybody who wasn't thrilled when Manaea got re-signed and then came back this year at one point, especially that last game before the All-Star break. I wasn't opining for Harrison Bader to come back in the offseason. They ended up being right about not bringing back Jose Iglesias or J.D. Martinez. Everybody that wants to say those were the heart and soul of the team. Well, they were also J.D. Martinez is like a pickleball owner now, and Jose Iglesias is like, he's basically playing the Acuna role, and Acuna played his role fine as a guy that could, he was honestly more valuable because of what he could do with his speed and the late inning pinch running that he was able to do. Having said that, when you have like all these unforeseen things and then the things in your control that you could have prevented against, it's a collective bunch of things that went wrong. And if it wasn't for Nolan McLain coming up and being somewhat of a prince that was promised, and these four guys at the top of the order having the great years, good to great years that they had, I wonder how long they would have lasted it in any capacity as being good this season. You know, was this always destined to be like an under 500 team, but you had those five things potentially. And I guess just to say the first 2.5 months that they got from the rotation before it completely fell off a cliff. Were they always destined to be like this bad of a team that falls out of a playoff race and doesn't miss it altogether?
It's hard to say, you know, like there's so many, and this is the thing that's going to drive us all insane over the next 6 months, is there's like 15 different instances, particular games or just moments in particular games that you can go back to and be like, if that went different, you know, last Saturday against the Nationals is going to be the one that bothers me the most, I think, out of them all, with Brandon Nimmo striking out with the bases loaded and not winning in extra innings in a tie game.
Just but you real can, quick, just, Rich, I go through my Twitter, not you in particular, yeah, Mets fans. I spent the middle innings after Pete lined out today, 116 miles an hour, the hardest ball a Met has hit this season, and it's an out. It was just the appropriate way for
that's when
for
you knew
that inning to go. It's like, oh, that's right, it's not their year.
Yep.
I just went through a litany of box scores, posting them out. Like, what if this had gone different? Like you mentioned the Nationals game last weekend. How about the other six losses to the Nationals this season? One of which, I don't know if you remember this, but the night that I was, or the day, I guess, I was enjoying the Knicks beating the Pistons in game four of the first round this year, Mets blew a 7-1 lead, had a 7-1 lead in the seventh inning in Washington. Two nights earlier, they lost on a night where Diaz couldn't pitch and Stanek had to pitch the ninth inning. They blew a lead in the ninth inning against the Nationals.
Didn't Stanek blow both of those games?
I think he blew the Sunday game too, but the middle innings, I believe, were either blown by Max Kranich, remember him, or Jose Buto, remember him? there's a Texas Rangers game, one of the few blown Edwin Diaz saves, as you can go to. The one I'm going to go to is with Cookie Carrasco on the ropes the day after Pete Alonso breaks the record for home run, sets the Mets single career home run record. You're up 6-0 after a rain delay, and your all-star David Peterson gives up 9 runs in the fifth inning or fourth inning, and you lose that game after being up 6-0. There's all the Helsley games you want to go to. There's all the Marlins losses. There's
finale against the Reds. That's a 2-game difference when Marte hits into the double play in a one-run game.
Speaking of Reds games, the day they retired David Wright's number, where they're up for most of the game, and then Soto hits a game-winning grand slam just foul. Like,
how about the game against the Reds that they punted after the All-Star break and threw a fucking bullpen game after the All-Star break?
Yeah.
These matter.
That one in particular matters. Yeah.
Every game against the Reds you want to talk about, those count for two.
Yeah. How about the two Dodgers games? Actually, go to three Dodgers losses that they had this year.
The one in particular that I remember the most, I know they blew one in the ninth inning, I think.
So Brazoban on a night where Diaz was
Max
off.
Max Muncy
hits the home run to tie it. Yep. 2 days later is the one you're going to then point out, right?
No, I'm going to point out to the one at Citi Field where the Mets had the bases loaded like
five innings in a row
or something, and they lost, and I think in 12. It was truly like an invisible force field when it came to some of these comebacks of like, even when they did it, there was like two or three games where they actually overcame a deficit to tie games in the ninth inning, and they always lost anyways.
Well,
and
so to that point, that Dodgers game is a game that won at Citi Field. It was a game they were down 3 in the ninth, came back to tie it, didn't score after holding the Dodgers scoreless in the top of the 10th, didn't score after holding the Dodgers scoreless in the top of the 11th, and then they lose in 12. the last game at Dodger Stadium during their only winning road trip this season, by the way, their only winning road trip, because if they had won today, this will be their second winning road trip and it would have got them into the playoffs. But I digress. Up 4-0 earlier in the game against the Dodgers, David Peterson gives up three runs. Then they go up 5-3 in the eighth inning and Reed Garrett blows it. It gives up three runs. They lose 6-5. Brett Beatty had a big error. There's a Cleveland game during their second big losing streak. Alonso hits a big home run to tie it. They're down. They're down 5-0. That was a Manaea implosion in the sixth inning. They give up five runs in the sixth. They tie it in the eighth inning. Pete Alonso's 4-for-4, right? Comes up and Lindor hits the double. The Sarbaugh non-send of Tyrone Taylor. They walk Soto to load the bases, and then Pete strikes out, and then I believe Jeff McNeil lines out. The Mets lose an extra inning, 7-6. You could pick your margin, your one game margin that you want to go to, Mets fans. It's appropriate. All the Brewers games in Milwaukee that they had a lead in and lost.
How about
a bunch of others? Yeah,
and some other things that don't go into just games that they blew or didn't come back in. How about the fact that everyone with eyes, including like prospect people who I know, like Joe DiMaio, who are like very conservative when it comes to calling up prospects, everybody knew Nolan McClain should have been up in the first week of July. Even if you want to be conservative, midway through July, they don't call him up until the middle of August. How many starts did the Mets punt when Nolan McClain was ready that they could have used now that were started either by Frankie Montas or Justin Hageman that they just gave away?
Yeah.
Let alone the other, you know, kids that they eventually called up.
Well, so the
McClain is the most glaring.
McClain is the most glaring. And I remember even in the moment, because they wanted to preserve his rookie status. And
cool. We did that.
Congrats. Yeah. I mean, mission accomplished.
Awesome.
In the moment, I remember saying, like, if you're going to do this, you then can't still give me Frankie Montas. And Montas has multiple games this year that were just they're automatic losses on the schedule. And Paul Blackburn does as well. We didn't even mention the game that started the tailspin. I know people go to when Senga got hurt. That moment was the tailspin. They won that game. That was the ending of a 7-game winning streak. Then the next night they play the Tampa Bay Rays.
5-0.
And Paul Blackburn literally blows the game and they lose 7-5. Like the Paul Blackburn starts that weekend series against the Pirates, where I have a Blackburn loss and a Montas loss, and they get outscored 30-4 in three games. Like, you can go through so many different like process and organizational failures that could lead to one more game being lost. But I think, Rich, we're going through the one game margin. I maintain this offense was probably good enough to make the playoffs. In fact, I don't even think probably is the word. There's a lot of good individual seasons on here. They would have been a playoff team with this offense, with bad pitching. This is historically atrocious pitching. The most pitchers ever used by a franchise in baseball history. That stretch of the season where only David Peterson was going six innings, and you had to go back to 1907. Was it that you had a stretch that long where only one of your starting pitchers was able to go six innings? And that was during a time where teams had like seven pitchers on their roster, so you had to go six innings, even if you didn't have it. This falls on the pitching for me more than anything. I don't know how you largely usually lean offense, but this offense was good enough to make the playoffs. This pitching wasn't good enough to finish like with 70 wins, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like to have, and the Yankee fans are starting to come into the chat now, including Sean with a W. What's up, Sean? Thanks for that.
You jackass.
Jerk. Yeah. How the Ravens doing?
They're better than the Mets.
I got very little ammo right now.
And that's it, real quick. I think that is the thing that Mets fans are going to have to wear for the next few months.
We have to.
I never once said the city's under new management. I'm more so just like made fun of management. Like, how do you let your best employee go to the second team in the city? And it was more of a reminder that the second team in the city has gone up a few floors. Now, that floor may be on fire right now, but like the reality is for the next 14 years, we still do have the valuable asset that you let walk. Hopefully you get a title this year to make up for losing that asset, but I digress.
Yeah. I'm going to respond to that real quick and then get back to the question you originally asked me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the part that stings the most is the Mets as a team, they deserve what they get. Anything anybody says, it's like totally fair game because the Mets did this to themselves. Like they opened themselves up for this 100%. The Met fan, other than like maybe the jerks out there, and there are plenty of Met fans I don't like either. What sucks is like we got bullied by Yankee fans our entire lives, like 20, 25 years. We're taking it on the chin pretty much every year. And we just kind of had to because that was the way that it was. And after all that time and living with the Wilpons and all that stuff, we finally got one over on them. And you felt like the Mets deserved, karmic-wise, and I don't really believe in karma anymore these days. It felt like the Mets fan deserved to just like get one. And the fact that the karmic justice is the Yankees stay good and the Mets miss the fucking playoffs, like, that sucks. That sucks.
It sucks. I agree. I also don't believe in karma because, like, the evidence is in the performance, too. I don't believe the Mets lost this year because of karma or because...
No.
Like, the Yankees will always dominate the Mets. I believe they lost this year because their pitching fell apart. Like, I believe that they lost this year because they made the wrong moves at the deadline. I believe they lost this year because... Or missed the playoffs this year, I should say, because of unforeseen things. It's really, again, this can lead back into the question because of what the pitching staff became, what the arms that they were forced to throw out here and justify as like, all right, David Peterson, you have an ERA of 9 in the second half. Please go out there and try to get us 3 innings. Oh, you can't do that? Oh, well, like there are so many different things on the pitching side that went wrong that have nothing to do with whether or not the Mets got one over on the Yankees for Juan Soto. Like, that still happened. And I think from now on, when it comes to a bidding war, people will not just assume they're going to the Yankees. It doesn't matter today. What I'm trying to get across today. Like, the Mets will probably still win bidding wars in the future. It just might not translate to playoff berths. And maybe that's the wake-up call that a lot of Mets fans need today.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. And, you know, to your original question about pitching and offense and stuff, like, we're never going to disagree on the fact that the Mets pitching was their biggest problem. But I've been saying it for a long time, and it reared its head on the final day of the season. There has been something wrong with the Mets offense all year, where the fact that this team has these four guys with all these gaudy stats, but they lose these games. The game to the Nationals couldn't get a big hit. The second game to the Nationals couldn't get a big hit. They get shut out on the final day of the season. They're 0-70. They finish 0-70 when trailing in the ninth inning and struggled for large parts of the season with runners in scoring position. They had a bit of a renaissance there. Still did not finish particularly well. The pitching is the number one problem. If they pitched better, they would have made it. But I do think that it is an issue that, if not addressed, will come back to bite them in the future. If they just say, hey, let's just make the pitching better and like the offense is fine, I think that's a mistake, because there is something that has not worked with this collective offensive group when the game is on the line, at least in 2025.
Yeah, in 2025. It didn't. And that, look, it's the first time I've ever seen a team go 0-70 when trailing after. It's probably because it's one of the few times it's ever happened.
The, you know, Pete Alonso home run against the Brewers is still the last Mets comeback in the ninth inning.
Down 9. Yeah. Yeah. And look, they did have moments where they did get big hits this season. They just didn't win the game. Like the McNeil double against the Dodgers in the one game that they lost at Citi Field to the Dodgers is a big hit. The Ronnie Mauricio home run in San Diego. Remember that when they actually did come back to tie a game? We're a week and a day removed from Juan Soto tying the game with a base hit in the ninth inning. We're a week removed from Alvarez hitting the game tying home run and it getting brought back from the National center fielder. I do agree that there are some moves around the big four that I would make. Vientos becomes a very fascinating player to evaluate this offseason. You need to address center field. The catcher position is a very interesting thing to evaluate. I like Francisco Alvarez. Need to see more than a 40-game sample to just be like, he's your everyday catcher going forward.
I think I saw enough to feel okay.
The better backup? They had the best defensive backup in baseball this year with Luis Torrens.
I don't know what the answer is, and I think that's why this is going to be a fascinating offseason where David Stearns is really going to have to earn the paycheck this winter, because there's no easy answer. People said it in the chat. Pete Alonso straight up said to reporters after the game he's opting out, which, again, great timing. I'm sure he was asked directly and didn't want to lie, but like,
that's also Boris 101. Like, remember when Boris, the season ended,
Soto did it
in the World Series.
Soto did it last year. Garrett Cole did the hat thing after the World Series. I get it. I just, you know, seconds after one of the biggest collapses in baseball, I don't need to hear Alonso saying he's opting out and the Mets leaking to Andy Martino that the coach is safe. Even if both those things were true, like, we could say that tomorrow. I don't need that in the 5 minutes after they lost this goddamn game. Pete Alonso opting out. Bring him back. Don't string this out to January where you have to like hold on to some of your other assets because you're not sure if he's coming back or not. Like, I had John Morosi on about a week and a half ago, and he said the Mets missed their chance to trade Vientos for a legit haul because they waited so long to bring back Alonso because they didn't know if he was coming back. They missed that opportunity. Vientos has probably extremely little value right now, and I think there's almost no way he's on the team next year.
Yeah,
I think Jeff McNeil is definitely gone, and his last at-bat as a Met was horrific. I think Kodai Senga is getting traded. But outside of that, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to do some unexpected, clever things.
Maybe. I think, so from everything we just said, let's just get on record. Both of us want Pete Alonso back on the New York 100%. Mets next year. And I think coming off the season, because again, I got to make this point even stronger. The credibility that David Stearns had at the end of last season, where all of the one-year minor league contracts that you handed out, almost all of them panned out. Like, the Jose Iglesias thing was the theme of the season, that you added a guy as a minor league invite that was a AAA for 2 months and then called him up and he became the spokesperson for the season. They signed JD Martinez with 2 weeks left before spring training ended, and it ends up being like the leader in the clubhouse and a good DH for about half the season. Like, not trading Starling Marte, he became like a solid right-handed platoon. Now, fortunately, they had him playing the field last year, and then I'd argue got a worse right fielder defensively than him. But like, the Jesse Winker move was a big one. They say what you want about Stanek last year, but he was in the playoffs and they just got him as a waiver claim. Same for Phil Maton, and I forget the lefty's name, but there was Danny Young. Like, all of the moves that Stern made to try and just patch together a bullpen on the fly, it was basically, you know what? I trust this guy. He seems to find value where other people don't. 47 pitchers later in this season and not pulling the right trigger on when to trade Vientos, not trading for the wrong center fielder, like flatly trading for the wrong guy. When you had a guy on the Twins that was in-house last year that a lot of the guys still like and still reference in Harrison Bader, and not only do you not trade for him, you let him go to your division rival and completely flip the division race that you were this close to getting back into. Like, all of those one-year margin moves backfired this year. So now where you might have had the credibility to let Pete walk last season, you just don't have that this year. You want to talk about fire and pitchforks and torches. If you let Pete Alonso walk after the season that your team just had that you put together, I just, who's going to trust this front office anymore? Who's going to trust that he's going to say, hey, we have a plan. Like Ryan Clifford's in AAA, he had a good season. It's like, no, you let one of the franchise's most beloved players walk. So yeah, they need to bring Pete Alonso back. That's first and foremost in my mind.
You're not replacing 80 extra base hits, especially from a guy, again, who is beloved amongst the team, amongst the fans, amongst the city. Wow, that is a crazy comment.
Laughing at Doug Soto for pitching.
We have to bring it up just to respond. I can't even continue.
It's very funny. It's very funny.
Gregory Soto. I agree. Yes, the Mets should get rid of Gregory Soto.
Soto.
Great point.
Another move, by the way, that ends up not working out for David
at
Stearns.
All. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that, like you said, pretty much everything he did last year worked. And then almost everything he did this year blew up in his face. Yep. The handful of moves you can call out that are good, the two obvious are obviously re-signing Pete and bringing in Soto. And some people won't give him credit for that. They'll just say that's Steve Cohen. But it's like, if you're going to give him the L's, you got to give him the W's. The only savvy move that I will say for David Stearns that worked out, I'll give him two, is Griffin Canning and Brooks Raley.
Yep.
Bringing back Raley wound up being absolutely massive. Of course, it doesn't really wind up mattering, but it helped give them a chance as their lefty from the bullpen once AJ Minter went down and Gregory Soto was very hot and cold with this team. But Stearns is going to be in the crosshairs of every fan. People don't like that he's smart for some reason. I just don't like that he had a bad year. Carlos Mendoza is going to be in the crosshairs of people, and it looks like they're both going to be back. I don't think Stearns should be let go because the president of baseball operations, that's a long-term plan. You're not going to blow that up in year two, even after something like this. But he's going to be looked at a lot differently now, and he's going to have a big offseason because this is an owner, we've talked about this before, that sunk a ton of money and resources into this team. He challenged the fans to show up, and they not only showed up, they showed up in record numbers with the best attendance for a full season Citi Field history, and they were rewarded, excuse my French, with absolute dick. And yeah, fans are not going to take that again coming into the year, and Cohen's the wild card, and I don't think he's going to do anything rash, but if the Mets don't have a good offseason, if the Mets have a disappointing 2026, anything is possible.
I'm glad you brought up the fans, because I'll never forget last year during the final homestand, there was a Monday night at Citi Field, barely attended, and the Mets had just lost 2 out of 3 to the Phillies, and camera pans around the Citi Field stands, and Keith Hernandez goes, light crowd for a pennant race. And suddenly Gary Cohen's agreeing and Howie Rose is agreeing and a lot of Mets fans digging in other Mets fans' pockets. Why are you not at Citi Field tonight on a Monday night in the middle of September?
Nimmo said something about
right, like need this place packed out for the last. And the Mets went 6-1 on that road on that homestand. And the guy who lives 10 minutes from Citi Field, felt attacked. It's like, yeah, I was watching you on television, Gary and Keith. Like that's what I was doing on a Monday night where a lot of us have jobs. And then Steve Cohen went out and got Juan Soto. And I am saying Steve Cohen went out and got Juan Soto. I'm sorry, that I actually do give. Like the reporting over the offseason that the first round of bids that were placed, the Mets were so low that Boris then went to Cohen and was like, hey, your boy Stearns just put in the lowest possible offer. If you want to get into this, you have to take over negotiations. And he did. So between Soto and Alonso being the things that I liked from the offseason that worked out, I don't give Stearns any credit for those. Having said that, you give the fan base credit for answering the call from the owner. Like, hey, look what I just put into this team. Look how many millions, nearly $1 billion that I put into this team. This season better be better than 16th in attendance. I went to 10 games this season, went to 2 on the road, including Big Brother across town. Like, I did my part, Mr. Cohen. Your team did not. The fan base did their part. The pitching staff and the front office did not. So yeah, I better not see anything about, like, hey, pack the ballpark ever again, because we answered the call. And as far as I'm concerned, you now have to look inward at what went wrong on your side of things and how to fix this offseason.
Yeah, it's like that meme where people edit that movie clip combined with the clip from I Think You Should Leave, where it's like, I'm doing my part. I didn't do fucking shit.
Yeah.
That's the Mets this year. And yeah, I don't want to hear about it, especially, you know, I don't make enough money to do season tickets or whatever, nor do I have the time for that. But season tickets prices went up for next year, and that's going to be tough to defend, especially now.
Goodness gracious. Yeah.
It's rough, man. You know, it's kind of weird to think about when the Mets collapsed in 07 and 08. I was a teenager. I was a senior in high school, and then I was in my first year of college. And it wasn't really like, you know, people making content on YouTube or anything like that, or Twitter was barely a thing. And I kind of always wondered, you know, how people would react to such a collapse now, when you can, like, go back on the internet and kind of find videos from everything. And here we find ourselves in one of those videos that people can watch in 15 years and be like, I wonder how people reacted to the Mets 2025 collapse, where they were 21 games over 500 and didn't make the playoffs. A couple stats on that real quick, because I know you have to get out of here probably in the next few minutes. So the Mets, again, their high watermark of the year was 21 games over 500. It's the most games over 500 they've been and missed the playoffs in the wild card era, which has existed since 1994. It's only the, I believe, fourth or fifth time in franchise history that they were 20 games over 500 and missed the playoffs at any point. Most of them, again, were like in the 70s and 80s when there were two teams that made the playoffs. So there's a Mets team in there that was like 36 games over 500 and missed the playoffs. Not only that, in terms of baseball history, the Mets finish with the third worst record ever for a team that was once 21 games over 500. The Mets, I believe, finished 4 games above 500. They win 83 games, which is 6 games less than they won last year.
38-55 over the final 93 games. 38-55.
And credit to the Reds, I guess, but I don't want to hear that the Mets got caught. The Reds went 25-26 over their last 51 games.
Yeah.
This is not the 2007 Phillies or the 08 Brewers or the 2022 Braves. This is the Mets giving away a playoff spot to a mediocre team that will probably still wind up beating the Dodgers because baseball's stupid.
Dude, I'll tell you, I was very ready to come on here and commend the Reds for sweeping the Brewers to end the season for majority of today. Like, the first 3 innings when they're up 2-0 against the Brewers,
I looked over.
I'm sitting there like, you know what? No matter what the Mets do, like, credit to the Reds. They lost those 2 games against the Pirates, and they won 4 straight, largely on the back of their pitching. You know, I'm staring at this like, hey, the Mets needed one more game, but, like, credit to the Reds for going in and sweeping the Brewers. The fact it ended this way, I can't give the Reds any credit. They have that last weekend against the Cubs where they took all 4. If you want to give the Reds any credit, it's that. Like you said, this wasn't the Phillies going 13-4 while the Mets go 5-12 down the stretch. No. This isn't the Braves playing at a 112 win pace while the Mets play at a 100 win pace over the final 4 months of the 2022 season. Like, that, the Mets got caught, and it was barely got caught. They got caught to tie, and it was a 1-game difference in a 101 win season that didn't matter for either team because the Phillies ended up going to the World Series. This was different. This was a collapse. This is up there with 07 and 08 because, and I guess for me, we could close here because I have to run, unfortunately. Like, comparing it to 2007 and 2008, I think you just hit it that, like, six teams made the playoffs this season and the Mets weren't one of them. So
2007 Mets won six more games than this team.
They make the playoffs in this new format in both of those seasons. So, yeah, it would have been more like what the Tigers just did, or would have been similar where you back into the playoffs as a wild card when you right. should have been division champs. Mm-hmm. But to miss the playoffs completely, it's just it's worse. It's not as bad from a pain standpoint. I will be so over this in a week because I did not like this team for the past 4 months. From a level of collapse, this is the worst in franchise history. This is worse than 07, worse than 08. The Reds might go on a run because baseball's weird, but I don't have like any ill will toward the Reds for passing the Mets or any type of rivalry. The Mets got the help they needed from the Brewers and the Reds for losing to the Pirates. Like, that's they lost it themselves.
Yeah, that's the one thing before you head out that we didn't talk about on the top because it was much more raw. I think it's starting to set in now. That's the final indignity, right? They actually got the Mets never get the help that they need.
Yeah.
They got the help. The game ended first. The Reds game ended first. And they just fucking blew it, man. Like, we said it going into the day, there are four possible outcomes. Only one gets the Mets to the playoffs, and there was one in particular that would be more painful than any of the other ones, and it's exactly what happened because the 2025 Mets are the arbiters of maximum pain, and that's how their season dies.
When Gary said in the eighth inning, the Mets now have control of their own destiny, it was just is why he's the best at what he does, because it once again verbalized, oh, they're going to get destiny back in their control. Like, this collapse will be something that they did. This isn't, like you said, this isn't a better team passing them. The worst part is the Marlins finished under 500 this season, but played this weekend like it's the World Series. Whatever. You haven't had anything to celebrate since 2003. Fine. Celebrate whatever this weekend. The better team won 2 out of 3 this weekend. And that, I think, is the indictment on this team and on this season, that at the end of the day, you weren't as good as the Marlins, who have like the payroll lower than Juan Soto's average annual value. So
you lost your last four series to the Marlins and Nationals. There's the season right there. Forget everything else.
If they lose, 7 of 8, then they make the playoffs, Rich. If they lose 7 of their final 8.
One less game. If they just split that stupid series with the Marlins instead of losing 3 out of 4. But yeah, we ran through all the ifs already. It wasn't to be. And I mean, this is the way this team should have gone out, honestly. Like, if we believe in like bookends and narratives that make sense, if you're writing like a script, this is how this Mets team should have died. And the last thing I'll leave you with is, you know, I've been thinking about this for weeks, and now that it's over, like I can reaffirm this. The 2024 Mets reminded me why I love baseball, and the 2025 Mets reminded me why I hate baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. I owe you a mulligan. Shout out to the NBA that I'm now about to go dedicate the next 7 months of my life to. Shout out to the Game Theory podcast, where we're doing over-unders on win totals for the Eastern Conference. Boy, am I afraid to take the over on the Knicks, because I went into this Mets season optimistic. Hopefully I can go into that season optimistic too. I owe you a mulligan where we talk more about the offseason. Maybe we'll do it over at Mets Therapy, but thank you for having me for this therapy session, Rich.
Thanks, Andrew.
And look, Mets fans, I'd say it can't get any worse, but Pete Alonso could leave this offseason, so it absolutely could get worse.
Thanks for leaving on a good
look,
note.
And shout out to Sean, my brother in the chat, says, what if he goes to the Yankees? There's your full karma, Rich. If Pete Alonso signs with the Yankees, then there's your full 360 swing back toward the Yankees, so. I doubt they're going after a first baseman, by the way. Aaron Judge very clearly needs to transition to first base at some point. But We'll see what they do. All right. Thank you.
The knife.
Thank you, Rich. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to me. I'll let Rich take it from here.
Appreciate you, buddy. All right. We're going to finish out with I'm going to read a couple of the comments that we didn't get to, and then we can close this horrible, horrible live stream out. First up, we got from John Leary. Stearns is a pretty level-headed guy. Do you think even he's losing his mind over this season? You know, I think these guys are pretty level-headed, especially as Stearns. He kind of always kind of, just has that like even-keeled mentality to him. But, I mean, he's smart enough to know that something major has to change after this, and that doesn't mean doing something rash, but, you know, I don't think you can bring back the same team. We talked about it earlier on the pod. I don't think you can make the mistake of between 2007, 2008, where, like, even if they keep Mendoza, which clearly looks like they're going to based on the Andrew Martino leak, I can live with that. But if the roster is going to look this a lot like the same, if the coaching staff is going to stay the same with Hefner and Chavez and Barnes and all these guys and Mike Sarbaugh, I think that's a big problem. I, you know, the definition of insanity is, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. If you just bring this same team back because, by the math, we should have been better than what we were, I think that's ridiculous. And I'm somebody who likes analytics. I like a lot of those statistics, but the good teams are good at that. But if you're just going to come back and be like, well, like by probability, it was a mathematical oddity that we missed the playoffs in 2025. I think that's bullshit. So they're going to have to do something different. And, you know, Stearns is going to talk to the media on Monday, according to Mike Puma at Citi Field. So we'll see what he says. It's a colossal, colossal failure by him and this entire team, without a doubt. David Crockett, I never believed, quote, the other team wanted it more until this series. Yeah, I mean, you had the Marlins broadcast calling the Mets out on Friday saying, you know, the last two series that these teams have played, the Marlins are the better team. They want it more. They're just better. And as much as I'd love to chit talk the Marlins, because that's an organization that has done nothing for decades and has to completely sell off and retool every 5 to 10 years, he's right. He's right. Go look at the NL East standings since the middle of June. The Marlins are ahead of the Mets. The Braves are ahead of the Mets. The Marlins wanted it more. They got the kind of players that, you know, the Mets could use some of those guys. And they played better than the Mets did for 4 months. Tavares SR, group hug. Yeah, definitely. In need of a group hug. Shorty Nutty, I think this is my cousin Jake, if he's still listening at this point. We're almost an hour in. Get out the drinks, Rich. Already did. And inside joke with my cousin, but Jake, I'm sober. D-Rails 93, Mendoza gotta go. I mean, look, you can make the argument for it for sure. We've talked about it like 5 different times on this podcast, but judging by that Martino leak, that seemed very strategic. David Stearns about a week or two ago also said that Mendoza was gonna stay with the club no matter what. So if you're just reading tea leaves, I don't think he's going anywhere, but I think you make the argument that he should wear this one. I don't like a lot of the things that he did or said during the stretch run. And I mean, he's definitely going to be in the hot seat next year. That's for sure, if he's back. Positive 916. I have a feeling this is not going to be very positive. This is a fucking travesty. And anyone who says otherwise is a damn fool. I can't disagree with that, man. I really can't. I-95 Bully, I know this one was for Andrew, but damn, I was rooting for you guys, GMAC. Wanted to see that Dodgers-Mets matchup. after hearing Nets fans say they would have beat them after my Yankees got stomped out. Assume you mean Mets fans. And yeah, I mean, hey, I-95. That's the thing. It sucks for us, but Yankee fans, even if the Yankees get stomped in the wild card series, it doesn't matter. You guys get to talk shit for a year and we can't do anything about it. So shout out to the Mets for putting us in that situation. That's really great. Let's keep going through some of these comments. John Leary, are they going to extend Mendoza for another year? He would be a lame duck manager next year. I think you're going to lose the PR battle if you extend Carlos Mendoza coming off one of the worst collapses in the history of this baseball team. And one of the worst inexplicable ones in baseball, if you want to go that far. Yeah, it would make Mendoza a lame duck. I think he's earned that. You know, if they're not going to get rid of him, he's not earned an extension, that's for sure. And if you really want this fan base to, you know, start losing their minds, you're going to extend the manager in the weeks after this. You can't do that if you care about the optics at all. You just can't. JK, they need more contact hitters. They left so many runners in scoring position with less than two outs. They probably get 8 to 10 more wins. Yeah, I mean, look, they had a brief renaissance with the runners in scoring position, I think, in late July and August, when their offense was really humming for the only time this season, I would argue. But they go 0-8 in their final game today, which is, again, me and Andrew talked about how appropriate the ending was. I mean, there's no more appropriate ending than what happened today, is that the Mets didn't know who was going to pitch. They gave up four runs in an inning, which it felt like they did almost every day for 4 months. And their offense didn't do shit with runners in scoring position. It's really a amalgamation of every issue that happened in 2025. I'm honestly surprised they didn't make a stupid error in the field, because that was pretty much the only thing that was missing from this game 162 loss. Chad Bowen, Mullins is a great outfielder and hitter based on his Oriole stats. Well, not if you watched him this year, Chad. Mullins was, I would say, league average-ish with the Orioles this year. I personally, you can go back and pull up the receipts, I didn't want him on the Mets. I'll say I didn't pound the table for Harrison Bader either, but I specifically did not want Cedric Mullins on this team. They got him. They thought he was going to be a floor raiser. I understood the logic, even if I disagreed with it. He was fucking horrible with the Mets, man. Like, not only was he bad defensively in terms of his range, in terms of his reads of balls, his arm, he was horrible offensively. I mean, Cedric Mullins, I'll look up the stats right now. I mean, if you thought he was having a down year with the Orioles this year when he had a 738 OPS, he had a 569 OPS with the Mets. He had 183. That's not even including Sunday's game where he came off the bench. And of course he flied out in his last at bat in the ninth inning. And that's also, you want to talk about this. Not that I ever expected the Mets to score 4+ runs in the ninth inning, because they've never even come close to doing that all year long. It was their MO. It's the thing that ultimately sunk them this season. But when I saw that the guys coming up to start the ninth were Mauricio, who actually worked out a walk, and Mullins, you knew they were cooked. Mullins was a horrible addition to this team. And honestly, you could make the argument that Mullins should have been cut when Tyrone Taylor came back, but you know, they ultimately did keep Siri under team control for future years if they want to keep him around. So they kind of got lucky with that. Maybe they had an understanding with him. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised Stearns didn't want to cut Mullins, just because he didn't want to look any worse than he did for acquiring him, because you know, DFAing a guy that you traded for as one of your big acquisitions a month and a half before doesn't look very good. I'll say that. Let's go to the next. John X, the New York Mets payroll for the 2025 season is approximately $339,505,504. That makes them the second highest payroll in MLB, and they missed the playoffs. Ha ha. Thanks, man. I'm going to have another drink because of that. I appreciate it. But again, the Mets put us in this position. That's the thing that really sucks. You know, Mets fans, again, some people got over their skis, but Mets fans deserve better than this. And the team put us in this horrible position where we just get shit-talked and piled on again for at least, at minimum, a year. Because the Mets could be 40 games over 500 next year. They could be the best team in baseball. It's not going to matter until they make the playoffs and they make a run, because this year happened. And after, like, the ripple effects, I'm telling you, from this year will live on for years, if not decades, for the PTSD of Mets fans alone. It is an unbelievable failure. It's unfair that we're put in this position, but the team put us here, and it is what it is. Another one from David Crockett. I need McNeil off this team. I think he's absolutely gone. I honestly think, you know, among the guys I said earlier in the podcast, I had brought up Vientos, McNeil, and Senga is the three guys I think are going to be gone. I think McNeil's probably the easiest one to get rid of. Yeah, he's got a little bit of money left, but it's not egregious. The Mets can pick some of that up, and he's appealing enough as a player where you could probably get something, or if you package him for somebody else. I don't think there's any way McNeil's back. I think the road is done with him. He had a better year, I think, than people expected, but winds up finishing the season something like 4 for his last 45, something like that. Yeah, he had a big RBI double on Saturday night, though they already had a multiple run lead at that point, but didn't do anything today. Strikes out in a huge spot in the seventh inning on a pitch that was not close to the strike zone. I think McNeil and the Mets has run its course. I know that that's been a guy that we've talked about for a few years as being a trade candidate, and they always seem to hang on to him. I think that that's done. JK, reality, the Marlins only scored in two innings this entire series, 25 zeros by the pitching, and still lost two of the biggest games of the year. That is unbelievable. Yeah, and he's right. You know, Friday night, Marlins scored 6 runs in an inning. That's the only runs they scored in that game. Today, 4 runs in an inning, 2 against, I don't remember who they're all charged to, but Stanek gave up 2 of them. Rodgers gave up 2 of the other ones. Rodgers, another trade deadline candidate where, yeah, his stats look good. That guy spit the bit many times on this team, often when they really needed him. I don't know if they're going to re-sign him. I think re-signing him would be fine, but yeah, if Trevor Rodgers never comes back, I'm fine with that. The Mets did give up a lot for him. And I would say, and just in terms of quantity of players, everybody whining about Drew Gilbert, I think, was way over the line. But, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, could use Buto over him, or, you know, kept him for down the line, I don't know. Rodgers was okay. He was their best of the trade deadline acquisitions. But, I mean, he gave up 2 huge runs today. And this wasn't the only time. Here we come to some of the shit talking. Again, we deserve this. Dodgers Z Showtime fans, pay Juan Scam Soto just to miss the playoffs. Laughing emojis. I honestly don't know why, like, a Dodgers fan would talk shit. The Dodgers sign everybody, or the reigning national champs. The Mets and Dodgers haven't really had beef in a decade, when the Mets beat them in 2015. If you want to talk about teams signing big free agents and not doing well, then I guess that's your prerogative. Again, the Mets have put us in this position where we have literally no recourse for this. JV, hey, Mets fans, I know y'all don't care for us Dodgers much, but if we get the Reds out of here, then hopefully play Philly, get them out too, then the Yanks if they make it. Look, man, I don't love the Dodgers, but I don't hate them. And in a National League playoff scenario where you've got the Reds, who I don't hate the Reds. I think it makes the Mets collapse maybe look not worse, but if they beat the Dodgers and they go on a run, there's going to be that whole, like, could the Mets have done this? And I think that makes it a little bit more painful. But look, man, if the Dodgers can take out the Mets' enemies and they can beat the Phillies or they can beat the Yankees in the World Series, I kind of have a bad feeling because this has been one of those Mets seasons from hell. I have this horrible gut feeling that we're going to get a Yankees-Phillies World Series where we lose no matter what because either a division rival wins or the Yankees can forever say Juan Soto went to the Mets and we immediately won the World Series. That is a no-win situation. That's worse than 2009. In 2009, it was easy for me to root for the Yankees. But with the Soto aspect of it, that would be a fucking disaster. So I'll root for the Dodgers, honestly. Like, I don't think the Cubs are going to make a run. Maybe the Padres will make a run. I don't love them either. But there's not that many teams to root for in the National League playoffs at this point that don't upset me. So, you know, more power to the Dodgers, honestly. I have no qualms if the Dodgers make another run of the World Series at this point. It is what it is. Uberman of Steel. What's up, Ted? Ted and I used to work together when we worked at MLB like 10 years ago. I love that Canning mood when they did it. Baffled when they let him go. I think this got corrected in the chat already. But yeah, he got injured. He tore his Achilles. I do think they'll maybe bring him back next year as like a second half depth option. I think that'd be a smart move for them because he was pretty good. But they're going to have to do a lot more than that to shore up their pitching problems. Kyle McLeod, this is my dad, for those who are wondering. I wonder if he's still watching at this point. This collapse is different because unlike 2007, this was long and gradual. There was time for all five phases of grief. By today, most Mets fans were at acceptance. I think that's partially true, Dad. There was a part of me that yesterday, because after Friday, you know, the Mets lose, the Reds win, and destiny's out of the Mets' hands. Andrew and I had a text conversation about this. I think I had a conversation with Michael Barron, who's my fellow co-creator of Just Mets. We had a similar conversation of like, part of me kind of hopes that they lose and get eliminated on Saturday so we can just like be past it, but you know, the Mets win on Saturday. They have a very John Maine and Johan Santana-like win where they – and that's the other thing. The parallels between 07, 08 and now in 2025, it's basically identical of the Mets against the Marlins in the final series of the season. In all 3 years, they lose game one on Friday. They win game two on the backs of an unexpected great pitching performance. You had John Maine, who threw a one-hitter in 2007. Johan Santana threw a three-hitter in 2008. And Clay Holmes allowed one hit, you know, six innings because it's 2025 and it's Clay Holmes. But the Mets only allowed one hit on Saturday. And then all three times on Sunday, though destiny was not in the Mets' hands in the beginning of the day, it wound up being in their hands. All three times, they lose. 2007, obviously Glavine implodes, but the Mets score one run. 2008, they score two runs. Ryan Church's fly ball comes just short to close out Shea Stadium. And today, because the 2025 Mets hate us more than maybe any other Mets team, they score zero runs. So the similarities to the three series are eerie. And again, like if you make fun of or, you know, kind of like admonish Mets fans for having PTSD about playing the Marlins late in the season, in a year where things are close, like you have no recourse because it's happened three times that the Mets have failed in the exact same way all three fucking times. So anyways, to go back to my dad's question or comment. Yes, there was part of an acceptance, but I think there was still this like irrational hope that something would change. I had a feeling the Mets were going to miss the playoffs this morning. I just didn't know how it was going to go. And the fact that it went the most gut-wrenching way possible once the Reds lost. You know, if the Reds won and the Mets lost, or the Reds won and the Mets won, not that you could live with it. I think we'd still be killing the team in this postgame the way that we have. But there's a part of it that stings less. The fact that the Reds actually lost and the Mets couldn't do anything. They just completely spit the bit. It's just brutal, man. It's just brutal. All right, Kevin Danishevsky. What's up, Kevin? Hopefully you won't say anything that pisses me off. We have a lot of DMs over the year. We lost these last two games because of Brett Beatty. Of course, you bring up Brett Beatty. Seriously, need to go out and retain Diaz and Alonso and get a bona fide ace with Benj and Williams on the way. I do feel good long term. It sucks, though. Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, losing Beatty did hurt. I was not a Brett Beatty believer for a long time. I think at this point he has played himself into the future of this organization, at least for 2026 as the third baseman. I think Mark Vianzo is going to be out of here. But yeah, I mean, you got to bring back Diaz. You got to bring back Alonso, assuming Diaz opts out, which I think he probably will. You got to bring him back. You got to bring Alonso back. And yeah, I don't know how you find that bona fide ace, Kevin, but you got to find him. You got to do something. I think going into next year and just thinking that the rotation is going to be Peterson, who faltered. I mean, he really blew it in the second half. If it's going to be Peterson, Manaea, Holmes, McClain, and one of Sproat or Tong, I don't know that that's good enough. I think after an offseason, we'll see if Peterson's having problems with the hip. We've kind of seen him gesturing towards the hip a little bit. So, you know, maybe he's having hip problems again. We'll see if after an offseason, if things get better for him. I do think that Manaea will be better after an offseason where he gets healthy. I want to think at least that most of his issues this year were health related, not ability related. And you know, Holmes in year two as a starter, I actually have some decent confidence in him. McClain's awesome, but I just think if you go back in and you're like, hey, it's like the same five guys who finished out last season, I think that's a mistake. I think you got to go a little further than that. And again, I don't know who that guy is that you find, but you got to do it. That's why these guys make the, you know, they're making way more money than I am, so they got to figure it out. I gotta figure it out. Buzz's base. Being a Mets fan is so bad for one's mental health. This is incredibly true. And I'll share some personal information. I've put this on Twitter before. I have no issues sharing some of my own personal stuff. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was when the Mets had that series, right around the Mets when they had that series in Philadelphia where they got swept. Would have been nice to win one of those games, huh? But in the game, after game one of that series where they lost 1-0, they had second and third with one out in the ninth inning. And of course, you know, what happens this entire year happened, you know, McNeil strikes out. And then Francisco Alvarez has probably the worst at bat you'll ever see from him or any major league player. The next day I had therapy. I go to therapy usually once a week. And sometimes we just shoot the shit. Sometimes we talk about, obviously, like longstanding problems that I'm having. And we wound up talking in depth about just like sports and the way that they make me react angrily. And I'm kind of tired of it. I want to, you know, it's not to say I'll be happy or I'll be fine after, you know, the Mets or the Jets or the Knicks lose horrible games, but it's being like a little bit less wrapped in it. And yeah, we talked about that, and to your point, Buzz, yeah, it's bad for the mental health, and it's definitely been a challenge, I would say, this year more than almost any other year. It's been tough. Let's keep going through. Gorilla, great. Look, that owner calls out the Mets fans for attendance who proceed to show up, raise ticket prices for season ticket holders, many of whom re-upped, and this is what you reward them with? Yeah, I think it's a totally fair question and comment. And yeah, man, I have nothing to add to that. I think it's tough being a Mets fan, and I think the owner has to speak, honestly. I think the owner and the front office and the coaching staff, they have a lot to answer for. And I think Mets fans deserve that after watching such a ridiculously painful and disappointing season. Mad Team Three Parents. Rich, I've been a Mets fan for over 50 years. You get used to it. I'm almost 20 years in at this point. I started watching when I was 15 years old. 2006 was my first season, which probably should have taught me something about expectations by the end. But I'd love to know when it gets easier, because I'm still going through it now. Yeah. Another Yankees fan. We got Chiali Van Putin. The Mets, the lovable losers. Yep. Nothing. We got nothing to say to that. Chi-Chi, get the yayo. Okay. Instead of signing Alonso, get Eugenio Suarez instead. Trade Lindor, Nimmo, and McNeil for Ketel Marte. Break up that core. Josh Naylor to play first base. This is a fucking crazy comment. Genuinely, like, I understand the impulse to blow up the core entirely, because you could make the argument, hey, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2025, this core of players of, you know, Lindor, Nimmo, Alonso, McNeil, leaving Soto out of that because this was just his first year. They've either collapsed, fallen short of expectations by a lot, or choked at the end of the season in those four out of those 5 years, with 2024 being the outlier. But come on, man. Like, you're not trading Lindor. And you got to bring Alonso back. You got to build better around these guys. I think there is an argument for moving Nimmo. I just think you're not going to be able to do it, because he's got a lot of years left on that contract, a lot of money. And while he's still a productive player, you know, he's got major holes in his game. He's not the on-base guy that he used to be. He's very, very hot and cold. So I get it, but I think we need to try to not be unreasonable. But at the same time, it's been like an hour since the Mets had a horrible collapse, so I'm not going to get on anybody for a lot of these comments. Let's keep going through before we hop on out of here. Mad Team Three Parents with another one. McNeil seemed like he wanted to get to the links as quickly as possible. I mean, you know, I think, you know, McNeil makes it easier for people to get on him. People always bring up the golf stuff. I think he was trying, you know, the Mets team was trying. They just weren't good enough, and they didn't have the mental fortitude or the, for whatever reason, the ability to come through in these moments. And I don't know. It is what it is, and I that's probably the last you're going to see of Jeff McNeil, I think. Kevin Janiszewski again. Quit complaining about Rodgers. He was good, Rich. They did give up way too much, though. He wasn't bad, Kevin. It's just there's one too many times I think he gave up runs. And when you consider what they gave up in terms of just like quantity of players, I think people expected better. His overall numbers are going to wind up being pretty good. He did give up a lot of inherited runners, which kind of helps his ERA. You know, if you want to argue that the Mets didn't use him right because a guy who gives up so much contact shouldn't come in with guys on base, I think that's fair, but maybe shouldn't have given up so many players for a relief pitcher who has to be used in very, very particular circumstances. I think you can make that that argument, but yeah. Steven Gerstoff, $68 million of Ohtani's salary is deferred, but okay. I don't really know what that's in reference to. Shorty Nutties, my cousin Jake with another one. Hey, Rich, it's Jake. Just wanted to tell you not to hurt yourself. Brother, if I haven't done it already, it's not going to happen. We're too many years deep into the Mets fandom for that. It is just baseball, but damn. KP, how about those Jays, though? Honestly, that is the one thing that surprised me about Sunday. I fully expected the Mets to not make the playoffs, just didn't know how it was going to happen. But the thing I did think was going to happen was that the Yankees, after being like the Yankees went through a Mets stretch before the Mets went through that stretch and looked like, you know, Yankee fans hated him. John Boy was fully out and ripping him all the time. And I mean, they were a horrible product to watch for about 2 months or so. And after all that, I fully expected them to just back their way into the division. They actually finished the season on like an 8-game winning streak or something. But Toronto actually held serve. They swept the Reds. I think they won their last 4 or 5 straight to keep the Yankees off. So the Blue Jays do wind up winning the AL East. That's, again, that is the only thing that surprised me this season. Kevin with another one. Vientos and Santucci for Grisham. Grisham's a free agent, I believe. So Mets would have to sign him. I don't know if they're going to. I've talked to some of my Yankee fan friends about this. Trent Grisham's had an amazing year. Like, he's been truly awesome for the Yankees, defensively and offensively. He hit over 30 home runs. It's like far and away the best seasons he's ever had. And I don't know that I feel comfortable giving that guy a 3-year deal to play center, especially if, you know, Benge or Williams is going to eventually come up in 2026. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I just don't feel like the Mets are going to do that, but again, they just collapsed, so who the hell knows? They could do literally anything. It would not surprise me. Eric Speranza, they don't plan to fire Mendoza. Well, another losing year, 2026. Mendoza is the worst game manager I've ever seen, and no motivation. Look, Mendoza deserves the smoke. Everybody on the Mets deserves the smoke right now. If you want to throw Juan Soto the smoke, he had an awesome year. He didn't do much in the last week of the year. Everybody has earned it. And Mendoza certainly has. I think Mendoza's earned being on the hot seat. I wouldn't have been upset if they let him go, but I'm also not super upset if they're going to keep him. My issue is more just strategically leaking to the press the second you get eliminated that he's fine. I don't really care for that timing of it. He's going to be on the hot seat, and he had a bad 2026 or 2025. He had a great 2024. So, I don't know how we want to measure those two things together. But yeah, I mean, if they're having a tough start to the season next year, it's going to get potentially ugly really quickly. So we'll see. John Perez, hey, what's up, man? Another friend that I used to work with at MLB. Not sure if we'll get an answer, but it felt like there was no joy in the clubhouse. The 70s A's hated each other and still won. Other than that, though, you need chemistry. Yeah, I don't know if they disliked each other, John, but I do think that there was something off. If you read some of the tea leaves, just like little bits you get from maybe some of the reporters or some of the people who cover the team, Howie Rose had a really interesting interview about a week ago with John Heyman and Joel Sherman on their show for the New York Post, where there was this kind of thing of like, they like each other. There's no issues. It's not like a 2007 kind of thing where like half the team hates each other. But there was no like vocal leader in terms of like the like guy to get in people's faces. Howie Rose questioned, you know, I don't know if do the Mets have a guy who has the passion to get this team over the hump. He questioned that. And that's, you know, that's Howie Rose. If Howie Rose is going to say that publicly, I take a lot of stock into that. And, you know, we've talked to a few different writers on the podcast over this season. And a few of them said, you know, in July, when I talked to them, we talked to Abby Mastracca, we talked to Will Salmon, we talked to John Morosi, who covers the team nationally, obviously, not so much every day, but they all kind of said a similar thing of, yeah, there's a quiet confidence and it's kind of like business as usual, but there is not a lot of that like rah-rah getting in people's faces kind of thing. So it's interesting. A lot of times when a team falls apart like this and has a huge failure, whether it's collapsing and missing the playoffs entirely or falling short of their ultimate goal, oftentimes there's an article that comes out in a few days, if not maybe a week or so afterwards, that kind of pulls the curtain back and reveals some things that were not public beforehand. I have a sneaking suspicion that something like that's going to come out about the Mets this year. You know, it seems like the Athletic kind of usually drops those things. So whether it's the Athletic, you know, it's maybe that's like a Rosenthal Salmon collab piece, or, you know, maybe a Jeff Passan thing. We'll see. But I have a feeling some stuff's going to come out about this team. And I'm not sure exactly what it is, but something was off beyond just like the pitching was bad. You know, the fact that this team found ways to lose so often in different ways every night, I think something else was going on there. All right, I think we got a couple more, and then we'll get on out of here. Narco Hampton TV, $800 million, destroyed the Mets with an unbelievable. The only one to blame here is that brainless owner. Not really sure the point you're trying to make, other than, like, I guess you're saying that the Mets shouldn't have signed Juan Soto. Juan Soto is, like, the best player for this team by far this year. Without him, I don't know where this team is. Like, is this team eliminated 3 weeks ago? I think people who... This is such a classic New York fucking thing. I'm sorry to get mad at anybody, because I know people are frustrated. I'm so upset. I yelled at the TV when they lost. I won't share what I said, but it was not very kind. I texted some things. I said it at the beginning of the show. I am not happy. I think everybody on this team deserves smokes. I think you could even criticize Soto for stinking the last week of the year. They could have used, how many times could they use a 3-run homer from him? And he never came through. But this, we have this instinct as New York sports fans in particular, when things go wrong, we always blame the good players. Like, we always blame the best players on the team. People hated Carlos Beltran. People, you know, everybody loves David Wright now. So many of you complained about David Wright all the time back in the day when the Mets weren't doing well. We circle these guys and we lift them up, and then we throw them into the garbage the second the team does bad. Without Juan Soto, I don't even know where this Mets team would have gotten. They probably would have been dead weeks ago. So you want to say $100 million contract to Juan Soto destroyed the Mets? I'm going to respectfully disagree with that. Let's not forget that the guy won a World Series in one of his first seasons in baseball and took the World Series, took the Yankees to the World Series last year, which a lot of people attribute to him. He got a lot of the big hits that year. So, like, let's ease up on the Juan Soto stuff, okay? David Leister, at least there's the Jets and Giants. Yeah, hey, at least the Giants won a game today. You know, they lost their star wide receiver for the season, because even when good things happen for New York football, something horrible happens. But yeah, there's Jets, Giants. Jets play Monday, and I'll watch. But if I'm going to be honest with you, I honestly don't care at this point. Let's see. Kevin with another one. What do you think about Shane Bieber as an option? Yeah, he's going to be free agent. Let me look up how he's been with the Blue Jays, because, you know, he's been hurt a lot. That's the one thing that would worry me, because, you know, if you want to be critical of the Mets and the way that they built their rotation this year, I think a lot of that is you built it on unreliable guys. David Peterson pitched career high in innings last year. Sean Manaea has had injury problems throughout his career. Frankie Montas has had injury problems throughout his career and has not been very good for several years. Clay Holmes transitioning from a relief pitcher to a starting pitcher for the first time in 7-8 years. You throw in Griffin Canning into that as well. Yeah, I don't think he had any injury issues. He had kind of a freak injury, but he mostly hasn't been good in his career. I think if you want to remove one, Kodai Senga, of course, missed basically all of 2024 with three different injuries and then dealt with injury this year. I think if you want to bring in a guy to the rotation who has also dealt with injuries, you know, you go back, Shane Beaver has made more than 30 starts or more just twice in his 8-year career. Made seven starts with the Blue Jays this year. It was pretty good, 3.57 ERA. But he only made two starts in 2024. He made 21 starts in 2023. 2021, he made 16 starts. We'll throw 2021 out because, or 2020 out because that was a COVID season. He did make 12 starts, which I think was pretty much the max that year. But he's had several years at this point. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4 years of full seasons where he's made under 20 starts. I would worry about that with the state of the Mets rotation. I think if you built a better rotation, you could take gambles like that. When you have a lot of gambles in the rotation, as they did this year, it's hard to take as many gambles. Charles Fish, the Mets are not a great team, period. No disagreements there. All they have is three good hitters in Soto, Alonso, Lindor, and one good closer in Diaz. After that, the rest of the players are mediocre at best. They're a top-heavy team, Charles. You can't argue that. You know, it showed out this year. They tried to win on high-end talent, and it was just not enough to overcome the issues with the rest of the roster. And then that high-end talent failed in clutch situations more often than not. And that combination is not good. All right. I think we're going to wrap up. This is the, I guess appropriately, the longest episode of the podcast that we've done so far this year. The 2025 season is over. The Mets will not play postseason baseball. And the ripple effects from this collapse of a season will be felt for a long time. And, you know, we're kind of all left here to pick up the pieces. You know, if you like what you heard today, unfortunately, be sure to subscribe and like us on the YouTube channel here. If you want access to full episodes of the podcast, most of them are behind a paywall. Sometimes we do some of these for free. But you can go to patreon.com/justmets. We'll be transitioning to a bit of an off-season schedule now. Still working through that. I think at this point, you know, other than maybe one more like reanalysis of what happened this year, maybe with one of the reporters, if we can get them in the next week or so, we'll take a little bit of a break during the playoffs before we go into our full off-season content. But so stay tuned for that. We'll have updates about that here on the YouTube, on Patreon, on our Twitter account. And then also subscribe to our newsletter at justmets.net. Honestly, look, we really appreciate all the support from everybody this year. We appreciate those who listened and chimed in today. This is one of the more rough, devastating seasons in the history of this team, and this team has plenty of them. I really wish we could have thrown a post-game party today for our first live show. But at the end of the day, you know, it just never, for a long time, it just never felt like that was going to be the way that things ended for this team. They did not feel like a storybook team like the 2024 team did. And they go out pretty sad. And it's going to be a fascinating offseason. I think we all need to kind of just sit with this for a little bit before we move on to that stage. But yeah, stay tuned for that. Mets fans, have a drink, take a step away, get some air. We'll be back eventually. Until then, we appreciate you. And let's go Mets, I guess.
Thanks for listening to this unlocked episode of the Just Mets podcast. If you liked what you heard and want access to full weekly episodes and additional bonus content, you can become a supporter of Just Mets on patreon.com/justmets or on justmets.net.